Hi, it's Melissa. Can you let me in?
Hi, it's Melissa Gear, your host for Knock Knock Who's There. Driven by dares, rumors, or just plain curiosity, Knock Knock Who's There is about opening doors and finding out who or what lies behind them. This week on Knock Knock Who's There. Walking around the Mount Vernon neighborhood of Baltimore feels like you've been dropped down onto the streets of Paris. It's this lavish open square of monuments and worn cobblestone, and the surrounding building facades drip with ornate Beaux-Arts architectural details. And on the southeast corner stands the renowned Peabody Music Conservatory that's been fine-tuning musicians from across the globe for more than 150 years. When you're in the neighborhood, you can't miss them. They're navigating the cobblestone, carrying these giant, bulky black instrument cases, and looking very serious and as if they're running very late. Peabody is regularly ranked amongst the top 20 music schools in the world, and it's had lots of famous graduates too, like Philip Glass and Dominic Argento, and Roberta Flack and Tori Amos were students too. I wondered if walking through the halls would feel like all of those music school movies with this cacophony of arias and scales and the tuning of instruments floating up from underneath the doors, and it turns out it does. I got to talk with instructor and cellist Amit Pellet and one of his students to find out what it's like to teach and learn at one of the finest music conservatories in the world. Originally from Israel and a sought-after soloist, Amit plays the one and only cello that belonged to Pablo Casals, arguably the world's most famous cellist. If that name doesn't ring a bell, it would be like playing Louis Armstrong's trumpet or Prince's guitar. Casals' widow, Marta Eastman Casals, granted Amit stewardship of the cello several years ago, and now he plays it all over the world. He's also taught at Peabody since 2002, and he, I've come to learn, is that rare combination of active performer and dedicated teacher.
Hello. Please come in.
Thanks.
I sit here one-on-one with a student for 4 years every week. It's like psychology. You dive into this treatment with a patient, and it's a musical patient, but of course it connects to their personality. And for me to be able to dive into that person and to find all the problems, to fix them, to get out, and then to witness how they change is huge. I often say that it's even more enjoyable than to make a phrase myself on stage and feel that I made a sort of a magical moment, to see like a physical magic where somebody had struggled so much and had problems, and a lot of people cry here on this chair, and then after 4 years they become stronger, better performers, and they're able to express their emotions with this piece of wood, with a cello. It's a great joy for me, and as a teacher, as this one-on-one mentor,
then I need to hear more the accent for the theme.
More octave.
The accent. The accent. Team. Hee! Yum. But you know, we talked about it. It's an English piece, yeah? Mm-hmm. And they drink a lot. Imagine in a bar. Hey! Tum, ta ta tim, ta ta tum. Hey! Yeah? If you don't do it, you miss the.
How would you characterize your teaching? Like when you say you go into a deep dive with a student?
Basically what I do is I identify a wound and I press on it so it hurts even more. I mean, it's I don't know if it's healthy in the short term, but in the long term it's healing in a way, if you want to be healed. So what I do with the students, they come in here, young, 18, freshmen. The first shock is to realize that they're far from being the great cellists that they thought they are in their small community, wherever they were. And I purposely break them down, cellistically, not personally, but it affects, of course, their personality. I take it apart to even a person who played the hardest piece, who's like Shakespeare monologue. And all of a sudden they come here and I work with them on how to pronounce vowels and consonants and what does it mean and how to do it physically. And for the first semester they might do just what we call open strings. They wouldn't even play notes on the cello. And they will, in a way, lose their confidence so much that they will even start questioning if they can play. But the build-up after that is what's interesting, because once we take everything apart, they start building up themselves again as cellists, but they know exactly what they're doing from A to Z. They know why they put the finger here, why they put the bow here, why they sit, how to use the back, how to breathe, and everything comes together. It has happened before that people could not take the parts and put them together, and they stopped, like maybe two out of many students. But most of them come back and heal and become much stronger. So it's, I always tell them, it's like an operation room. You come in here, I cut you down to pieces, and then every piece with you together, we fix. We analyze it, we fix it, we put it back into your body, then we close it. Now you're completely wounded. You need time to heal. So you go to rehab, you learn how to walk, but the moment everything is healed and it's correctly done inside, you can run much faster. You see, it sounds stuck.
That's what I hear.
Now, look what I do with my elbow. Instead of just on top of this, there's also a method of how to play cello, which is a sort of tradition that I have to be responsible that I pass to them. So we're talking about music, classical music. It's a history of about 400 years, and there's a lot of knowledge. That's why I have on the walls all those great teachers, cellists. Part of my responsibility is to pass on the knowledge that I was so fortunate to get. So within breaking them down, making them strong, and trying for them to understand physically how to play the cello, I also have to make sure that there's a book, like a manual of what needs to be done, and they need to get that information. So regardless of how I think teaching should be, there's a certain information that they should have. And it's a lot of information. It takes years to acquire it and then to master it.
Good. Okay. Can you do it in thumb position now?
My name is Joseph Staten. I'm a senior at Peabody. I'm from Poughkeepsie, New York. And I've been with Amit for 4 years now. And it's been just tremendous. It's been really amazing to study with him and to play with him on concerts and stuff, recordings.
The way he characterized his teaching is he said that when he starts with somebody, it's kind of like surgery. And you're cut up into a bunch of little pieces and then kind of reassembled correctly. Was that your experience?
Yes. I mean, I came in with a lot already. You know, I was just very tense. But he definitely took me apart. He said, no, we're going to change this. We're going to change this and this and this. And he has everyone play this piece when they come in at first. The grad students and undergrads. It's the Elegy by Gabriel Fauré. It's a beautiful, wonderful piece. And special relationship to Casals, of course, you know, the piece has. And he says, you know, you need to focus on these things, technical things. And he relates them. He always says, you know, it's never the technique or the music. It's like, you know, they're together. It's a sort of a symbiotic, you know, mutual relationship. And that's sort of how he taught that piece, the Elegy, and he teaches everything. You know, he'll say, this, you have to produce twice as much sounds in this passage, you know, and so musical, it's so big, and the orchestra's doing this, so therefore, this is what you need to do with the elbow, this is what you need to do with the body, this is what this is, and then he demonstrates, and it's, you know, it's super clear what you have to do. But yeah, he definitely has his method of sort of picking apart.
There are some people who cry in this chair. I mean, were you ever brought to tears?
No. I've had some tough teachers, and to be blunt, yeah, it's scary sometimes though. It's really scary, and sometimes it's like, oh my God, I have to fix this, or I don't know what I'm doing with my life, you know, all these sorts of things. And but again, it comes back to the trust, and it comes back to you know, knowing that he wants what's best for you when you're playing.
And I'm so intrigued. Scary. Can you expand on that a little bit?
The level is very, very high. And
the level
of playing. You know, the level of playing, level of musicianship, you know. There aren't many jobs for people who want to play their instruments at that level. And it's extremely competitive. And that is very scary. It's very scary. And when you have a teacher who demands a lot of you and pushes you, they make you realize that, you know, yeah, you should be. But at the same time, there's so much joy and so much, you know, love that's involved in making music, making good music, I believe. You know, love is sort of, you know, part of the job description. And to get in touch with that on a frequent basis requires that you surround yourself with people that want what's best for you. And that, I think, really, it sort of comes back to the teacher. You know, it's the mix between compassion and rigor, discipline. You know, you have to have the two, because both of them are in your best interests if this is what you really want to do.
Above the Everest with your arm, like you're going through a huge mountain. All you do is right here. Why are you working so hard for such, this is a distance. You're doing, so you miss it. No. The diminished chord, it's very easy, you know, for you. You're trying.
How did you choose the cello?
Originally, I wanted to play the string bass because it was super big and the lowest instrument, and it was just cool, you know.
Manly.
Yeah, yes. 7-year-old me was very, you know, it was very appealing, but there were no more left. Yeah, it was a school-run program, you know, and they had instruments and there were no more basses, so I figured, well, next best thing. But really, it was, that's sort of the kitschy side, but at the real story, I think, is actually I grew up listening to Yo-Yo Ma playing the Bach suites. My parents had a recording, and I fell in love with the sound from a very young age, so.
And how did you arrive at Peabody?
I studied for 3 years at the pre-college at the Manhattan School of Music, and I just came down to Baltimore because I had heard that there's this amazing cello teacher, and I was like, well, you know, I'll take a lesson with him, I'll audition.
So his reputation preceded him. I didn't realize that.
Oh no, yeah, he's I think he's very, very well known as an educator and as a performer. And, you know, I had that lesson and I just sort of knew, you know, it was like, oh my God, this guy is so different from what I've had. He's completely, but everything he says just makes sense, and how he puts it, it's like I want that.
Innocent, and then regret, and then passionate. Now do it.
It's one thing to learn the technical and the musical, but he was just now spending a lot of time kind of on the emotion behind the music. And how do you take that in? How is it absorbed as a student? I mean, there's a lot to think about.
Yeah, for me, try to get at what he's saying, you know, so you have to be a little bit empathetic as a student. You know, but sometimes it's like, you know, you have no idea. And that's sometimes the best, because you just have to go home, digest what he said, experiment, and eventually you usually figure out, oh, that's what he meant. Oh, yeah, that totally makes sense, you know. So a lot of it comes through experimentation and trust. You have to trust the wisdom and the experience of the teacher.
When once you master the facility, the vocabulary of the instrument, comes the most important part, which is to share what the composer wrote, the emotions behind it, with the public. And through the years, I've practiced with the students how to find the right words, how to ignite it in them, and how to really physically make them more involved, so the emotions will come out to the tip of their fingers, from the deepness of their soul. It's not easy to do, but there are technical ways to do it. And the first thing is to make them aware that the depth of the emotion that they're dealing with should come out not to a friend or to your girlfriend, which is just next to you, it's to somebody in the last row in a big hall. That's a totally different ballgame. It's exactly like theater. So a lot of the work I do with that kind of students, you know, the top of the line students, is to teach them how to behave on stage, how to exaggerate emotions, how to share, how to be articulate about it, how to identify the emotions, how to find the story. That's, at the end of the day, the most important thing. It's not how to play in tune. I mean, many people can play in tune. you need to know that. But after all, it's for a reason. And the reason is to share a message that the composer told us 100 years ago, 150 years ago, how to deliver it to the public. Same as Shakespeare. I mean, how do you bring that line to life in the language of English? And we do it in the language of music.
If you play like a machine gun, tom 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 tom, you kill everybody. Fine. But listen to piano. Try the whole thing.
You also have this unique group, the Cello Gang. Tell me about that.
I choose in any given project 6 students who obviously are very good to join me on stage, to join me on the road, and to share what we do here, to share the way we are making music and dealing with each other. With the public, and it has been really a jewel of my career to do that, because I see, like Joe is one of them, what it does to their performance when they play alone. They understand the expression side, the communicative side of being on stage much more than other students, because they simply do it. They do it, they get paid for it, they travel, they understand what it means to be prepared, what it means to get nervous, what it means when a presenter is waiting for you and you're late and you have to change fast and then go on stage. And they understand when you move the public, what happens when you actually have people who paid money and they're moved by it.
I think it's actually one of the most amazing things about being his student. I mean, we performed at the Memorial Concert Series for Bernard Greenhouse up in Cape Cod. We're going to Florida. We're going to Mexico this summer, San Miguel de Allende.
What's the hardest thing that you have overcome while you've been here at Peabody?
Intonation. You have to play in tune. It's something that I am always working on to be better.
So you mean in tune, intonation?
Yes, intonation, yes. Yeah, you have to play in tune. You just have to play in tune, or people are not really going to want to hear it.
So, and this is my ignorance, because it would be my assumption that if someone was in school at Peabody, that playing things in tune would kind of be a given. But you're saying that as a serious musician, it's something that is just always
You know, here's the great and horrible thing about being a musician, is that you can always get better at something. And intonation is one of those things. To really, really, really be in tune with the orchestra, with the piano, with yourself, with the cello, with the whatever, the chamber group, you know, requires the ability to listen. And actually, maybe that's the better answer to your question. Listening, really listening, is something that I have found difficult to do, to sort of get out of your head and just be present and aware of what's going on around you, with the pianist, with your own sound, with your body, and all this stuff. And that only comes through practice and experience and failure.
If you are infected by this disease of art, of music, it's like you can't stop it. You can't. That's why I tell the students, if you are here and you're 22 and you could do something else, but you still want to come here and take a loan and do it, and you love music so much, don't fight it. You'll find a way to live with it. You won't be a millionaire, but it chooses you. And if it did choose you, just stop fighting. Stop asking the questions, you know, what am I going to do? And I'm not good enough. You are a musician. That's it. And it's a blessing in a way, but it's difficult.
That's a short peek into the Peabody Conservatory in Baltimore's Mount Vernon neighborhood. Thanks for coming along. If there's somewhere you'd like us to visit, send an email to kkwtpodcast@gmail.com. I'm Melissa Gear. Join me again for the next episode of Knock Knock, Who's There?